Hello, folks. Welcome back to the High Performance Human Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Ward, founder of the triathloncoach.com, High Performance Human, and the SWAT Inner Circle. And I am on a mission to help you upgrade your human performance. I truly believe that we all have the potential to perform better as humans through improved sleep, nutrition, and stress management. And in doing so, live longer, healthier, and of course, improving athletic fitness as we go along the way. Now, I've written a book. It's a 40-page ebook called How to Be a High Performance Human. And if you'd like to get a copy, you can have one for a 50% discount. So that costs you just £5. And I'll have more details on where you can get that at the end of the show. Now, this week's episode is another solo cast. So it's just me you'll be hearing from. There'll be no guest. And I'll be taking you through the steps on the road to transforming yourself into a high performance human. My ambition for high performance humans is not just that they perform highly in their 30s, 40s and 50s, but that they continue to do so well into their 60s and 70s. I think one of the things that I've become acutely aware of as I've entered my middle and late 50s is that I'm now in the back end of my life. I don't have the sense of invincibility that I used to do when I was 30. And whereas upon those days, I perhaps couldn't see the end of the journey, now I know it's out there somewhere and it's coming along fairly quickly. And I want to do everything that I can to maximize my enjoyment of those last few years. I have people that I've known who've faded towards the grave, not really being able to enjoy the last 10 or 15 years or so of their lives because they've been in health and infirm. And so the money that they'd saved hard to enjoy in their latter years has just been spent on medical care and medication. Contrast that with some of my other friends, particularly those who are involved in triathlon, who are still competing in their 70s at a high level, doing Ironman races, competing at the World Championships in Hawaii, and in some cases, winning their age group. Now, if I could aspire to be anybody, that's the sort of person I aspire to be. Somebody who has an enthusiasm for life and the ambition to still keep improving, even though they've gone past what most people thought would be the end of our lives. I mean, think back to what they said in the Bible, and I'm not an avid reader of the Bible, but 70 years. So that's 70 years. And yet here's somebody in their early 70s beyond that who's still putting together the plans for their next campaign into Ironman. So that's the person I aspire to be. And there are other people. So what I want you to do as you listen to this journey, if you like, that I'm going to outline, is to think about health span rather than lifespan. A recent guest, Dr. Paul Clayton, who I will put a show link into and to the podcast, refers to this as morbidity compression or compressed morbidity. So rather than a steady decline of health like the one I just described a few moments ago and a quality of life in the final 10 to 15 years, an individual arrives at the graveside sliding to a halt on their motorbike or their push bike or their mountain bike or whatever in a cloud of dust and shouting, "Yeehaw, what a ride." Now that one, I want to be that person. And actually, when I do arrive at the graveside and shout that, I then want to give two fingers to the Grim Reaper and turn my back and say, "Not today, my friend." And as if I go on my bike roaring into the distance to enjoy my existence at full speed for another few years. Now, that's the ambition. That's the ambition I have for myself. That's the ambition I'd love to help you with. And in the next 30 or 40 minutes, I'm going to take you through the process at which I think we can all move towards that aspiration. So firstly, let me read you something from my book. This is the introduction. Now, I've likened this to that of a high-performance car, okay? It's quite a difficult analogy to explain that of a high-performance human. So this is the one I chose. So imagine it's a Ferrari. It's a beautiful-looking car, got a motor with an amazing engine, handles brilliantly, and these days they have state-of-the-art computers to manage everything. The suspension, the temperature of the engine, the air conditioning. They have electronic steering. Not that the steering and the car do it for you, but that everything's changing in the suspension in relation to the road and the speed and the G-forces and everything. Not like cars from the 1960s and 70s where basically you were having to muscle it round. Let's think about how the elements of that Ferrari relate to a high-performance human. So, the engine is like the heart and lungs, creating the power to drive the motor. The shell of the car is what gives it its aesthetics, like looking at a supermodel, male or female, and is like our skin and body. The suspension of the car is like the skeletal system, the bones, the joints, the tendons, the ligaments that hold everything together and provide a framework. And the computer keeps the car healthy, indicating when a service is due, or when the brakes need adjusting, or the tyres need replacing, or just inflating a little. And this is like our brain. And finally, we have fuel. The fuel that goes into this car, which runs only on top grade fuel, is like the nutrition, the food and the hydration that we put inside our bodies. So hopefully you're getting the picture now. Your body is like a Ferrari. At least I'd like you to think it is. You may not agree. Now think of the car and the human body at the same time. If we only worry about how we look, and there are a lot of people who exercise because they're worried about how they look, there's nothing wrong with that. But if that's all we worry about, that's like just polishing the bodywork all the time and not taking care of anything else. There's a lot of endurance athletes out there, I know, spend an awful lot of time doing aerobic work. If you're a runner, you run. You focus on building the engine, building the heart muscle, building and improving the efficiency of the pulmonary system so your breathing gets oxygen to the muscles and you can do more exercise, or you can go for longer or faster. But if all you do is aerobic work, then that's just like worrying about the engine. Our strength training is something we all need to do. We don't all do it, but we need to do it. Now, if you go to the gym and strengthen the muscles and the tendons, that's like improving the suspension and the chassis. Again, we don't want to just strengthen the suspension and the chassis of the car. Let's look at the computer in the car now. If we only ever update the computer and neglect the other important parts of the car, then it won't be as efficient as it could be. And finally, that beautiful engine and that lovely, expensive motor car, if we only put 2-star petrol in it, it won't perform as well as the designers intended. So putting those together, if you polish the bodywork without taking care of the engine, the beautiful car will splutter and belch along the road. And more so if you feed it with junk food, i.e. 2-star petrol. You can have a powerful engine, but it's no good if the chassis isn't strong enough to handle the extra power. So, for an example, think of all those aerobically fit iron men and women who stagger to the finish because their core is weak. Finally, that beautiful and well-maintained Ferrari with an out-of-date computer system could lead to the whole vehicle grinding to a stop as the hard drive freezes. It's a bit like having a nervous breakdown. So hopefully now you're getting the picture that this Ferrari only works well if we take care of all the parts equally. And if we overemphasize one part above the others, then yes, that bit will run sweetly, but the rest of it might not. And for a car like a Ferrari or a human body, everything needs to be in perfect working order. Now, obviously, I appreciate that there's a huge difference between the human body and a Ferrari. We can't minimize that. But think about this too. If you push a car too hard, if you neglect it a little here and there, you can spend some money, replace some parts, and it'll be as good as new. If you push your body too hard, you neglect a bit here and there, you can't fix it with money quite as easily. A new engine can be bought and installed without too much pain and with a little bit of time. It might take the same amount of time to put in a new knee or do some work on your heart or replace your shoulder, but it won't be such a simple fix, and you'll never work quite as well as you did previously. So we need a holistic approach when taking care of this Ferrari, just as we do when looking after ourselves. And that's what high performance humans do. Sometimes they focus on one aspect for a bit too long, but that's okay. So that's the opening section to my book. The point about this is that high performance humans are mindful. They're aware of what they do. It's about being present, about not dwelling on the past or dreaming too much of the future. Not that that's a bad thing, but generally staying in the present, being right here and right now. We'll come on to presenteeism a bit more later on. Going back to the analogy between the car and the human body, it's probably very rare that you're going to have everything in absolute perfect balance. You think about your life. You've got work. You've got family. You've got relationships with the broader family and your friends and work colleagues. You've got sleep. You've got travel and commuting and all the other little bits of things that you do in between. The stuff that doesn't contribute much to your happiness or financial fortunes, but still has to be done to hold everything together. And then if you're an athlete, and there's a good chance you are if you listen to this podcast, then you've got to fit in your training as well. And we've got to keep our health, and health has become much more important and topical in the last year or so. So you see, there's a lot to keep in balance. Another of my favourite analogies are those plate spinners. You've got to be able to spin all the plates. So if you're trying to spin plates, you will be aware that sometimes some of them wobble. And you have to go back and attend to that, stop it crashing. That's the mindfulness. That's the being present. If you're unaware of what's going on and you don't keep track of the other things, then you can get heavily focused on one aspect of your life and ignore all the others. And that's when everything starts to unravel and you have problems. In the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to talk about several of the areas that I think are important for high-performance humans. Please don't think that because I talk about them in order, any one is more important than the others. They're not. They're equally as important, but I had to put them into some sort of order. However, there are a couple of things that probably would be higher on the list of priorities, the first of which is time. It's one of the most valuable resources that we have as human beings, and it's the one thing that none of us, no matter how wealthy we are, can purchase more of. Okay, we're limited. We have 168 hours in a week, all of us. That is, those of us who feel like our life has amounted to nothing or not much, and those people who we look at and think, how did they manage to get so much done? How did they achieve that? They've got the same hours as me. Some of them have got the same circumstances. You know, not everybody that's highly successful is born into that success. There's an awful lot of them that came from homes where they had very little. And yet somehow they managed to do more with their 168 hours than a lot of other people. So they must be doing something. Now let's try and have a look at that in a bit more detail. I think from the people I know who've been highly successful, and regardless of whether they're athletes or business people, or maybe both, is that they're very good at time management. They're extremely good at understanding what needs to be prioritised and what's fluff and can be eliminated. There are things that they do in their time management which perhaps we could all emulate. They disappear the time vampires. Time vampires. These are the people that take up small moments of your life. You know, you get involved in an argument with somebody on Facebook and you keep going back to see the posts. See what they've written, interrupt what you're doing to answer another question here. All of a sudden, you've lost an hour of your life. If you work in an office, and for those of you who've been working from home and can't remember, you might need to think back a little bit, but you'd be in your office, you're working away on a project and getting a report done, and then there's that annoying person who says, oh, Bob, Sue, did you have a moment? Probably because they're bored and they want to come and share some of their boredom with you. Yeah, so they suck away your time. Talking of working from home, how many of us have distractions there? You have that little notifications thing on your phone or your iPad or your computer so that every time you see something, a message comes up and it's a Facebook message and then you get distracted by it and you go and see what's going on and then you end up clicking on a YouTube thing and all of a sudden you've lost 15 minutes. How long does each task take? I think high-performance humans are acutely aware of how long each task takes and they try to get it done in the minimum possible time, i.e. not extending that time. Some of them script their days. They don't just have a to-do list. They also have a script. They know when they're going to start something and when they're going to finish it, and they do their very best to make sure that happens and that time doesn't run over. They eat that frog. I think it was Rudyard Kipling that talked about eating that frog. It's not something I'd advocate, and please, if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, please don't be upset with me for mentioning that. It's just a terminology for if that's the most unpleasant thing that's going to happen in your day, then you should do it first and get it out of the way, because then at least anything else that comes along isn't going to be quite as unpleasant. The most successful people I've come across communicate very well and clarify very well. So there's no misunderstanding about what needs to be done. And they're really good at delegating. They're also really good at not multitasking. Now, by this, we need to be clear. If you're waiting for the kettle to boil, and in the meantime, you type off a couple of emails, you might consider that multitasking. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, if you're trying to hold a phone call at the same time as writing an email, I think that the other person that you're talking to will notice that you're not fully engaged and you may forget about what's been said or say something untoward. And also, you probably go back and find that your email's got lots of mistakes in it and needs to be written again. So actually, trying to do those two jobs ended up in creating more work. In that way, multitasking's multi-stupid. We talked about being in the moment. Be focused. Be there with that one particular task. So that sort of relates to no distractions and disappearing the vampires. And I think that it's important to think about the one thing. And that's a book that I read. It talks about the one thing. And at any moment, it's about focusing on that one task you have for the day to get done, the most important task. Focusing on the one thing that needs to be done that minute. Focusing on the one real thing that you need to do in this month or this year to get done. Okay, that doesn't mean you can't have other things, but you need to identify the one thing. Equally, chunking tasks together. If you've got phone calls to make, try making them one after the other. You have a morning of phone calls, half an hour long, with a set time and end period so that you know how long each task is going to take, so that you give people a deadline so time doesn't run over. You could get 8 calls done. If that's all your calls for a week, that's it. It's done then. And you don't have to break off for them each time and prepare for them differently. I think you should sit less and move more. That keeps the body moving, keeps you more alert. There's definitely a lot of evidence out there to say that if you spend too much time sitting at your desk, that has negative health implications. But it also has negative mental implications in terms of your sharpness. We know that if people don't get up and take a break at lunchtime, for example, that they are less productive in the afternoon. Again, high-performance humans that I've met are really good at saying no. They understand what they need to do. They understand which tasks are going to take them closer to their goal. They understand which tasks are going to take them further away from their goal. And whilst sometimes an invitation to do this or that might be good for the ego and flattering, you might find that if you say no, you actually achieve more in the long run. I also have used something called the 2-minute rule. So I know a lot of people who procrastinate, but they procrastinate about some jobs that take a minute or two to do. So they'll walk past a piece of rubbish or some clothes that are on the floor or something that needs moving to another room. And yet it might take them a minute to do that. And in doing so, it would clear the space, it would clear their mind, it would knock one job off their list. So I have a rule that if there's anything that I can do in less than 2 minutes, I just do it then. Finally, and this will come back to, into the conversation when we talk about sleep, I think, is working to your chronotype. The world really revolves around the larks, the people who get up early, because that going to work at a normal time, say 8 or 9 o'clock, requires you probably to get out of bed at 7, get ready for work, travel to work, get into your office, unlock it, or, you know, and prepare your computer, and just prepare yourself mentally for what's about to begin. If you're an owl and you don't go to bed until late and you have to get up early, you're sort of working against your chronotype. Owls are the sorts of people who don't function very well in the morning but tend to function well in the evening and tend to do their best work then. Now, trying to operate to your chronotype and work in a normal environment is really difficult, but if you can move some way towards making that work, you might find that actually makes you more productive. Certainly if you're working from home and you're working for yourself, you might find that a better way to go is to admit what you work out what your chronotype is and then try to arrange your life around that if you can. All right, that's what I've got to say on time. You may or may not agree with me, but these are my observations and my experiences. And I think that if you could find something in some of those and start to put them into plan, into your life, it will make a positive difference. Now, I talked about sleep. I put sleep at the very beginning because I do believe it's more important than some of the other things. Because some of those other things that we're going to talk about later won't be as effective unless you're getting good sleep. It's the bedrock for everything in your life. I would recommend that if you haven't read it already, you read the book by Matthew Walker, Why We Sleep. This talks about the evolution of sleep. It talks about sleeping in different animals and talks about how the body responds to sleep and why we perform better when we have more sleep, and also what happens to us if we don't get that sleep. For example, poor or lack of sleep is linked to a huge range of negative implications around health, to obesity, to heart disease and diabetes, shortened life expectancy. If you get good sleep, and from the majority of people, and I know that there are people out there who say that they can get by on 4 to 5 hours, but there's still no real long-term evidence that that is good for a person. I'm sure there are a small number of people, and I'm talking about 1 or 2% maybe, who can perform on 4 to 5 hours. But the long-term implications for that in terms of hastened onset into dementia or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's are still yet to be unproven or proven. So it might be okay in the short term, might not be better for your long-term health and therefore your health in older age. But if you're getting good sleep, it will boost your immunity, it will boost your sex drive, it will boost your mental acuity. If you're an athlete, there's no doubt, and there are strong links and lots of evidence about this, that getting more sleep will help you to recover and perform better. There's a reason why the world's best athletes are sometimes the world's best sleepers as well. They've identified a link between getting good sleep. And by good sleep, I'm talking about 10 hours. I think Paula Radcliffe spoke about that openly. And I'm sure there's plenty of other athletes. Certainly, if you go onto the Whoop website, and the Whoop is a sleep tracker that I use. It's a wristband. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And it really breaks down your sleep time, your heart rate variability. It shows you how much time you're spending in deep sleep, in REM sleep. There's also the Oura Ring. If you don't want to wear a wristband, you can wear a small ring on your finger called the Oura Ring. They do very, very similar things. And they've both got, both products have got dashboards where you can go and look at this data in depth. And you can learn a huge amount about what happens when you eat too late at night, what happens to your sleep when you drink either early in the evening or later in the evening or not at all. What happens when you have been on a long-haul flight and gone through several time zones. How your sleep's disrupted if you and how you get less deep sleep and therefore less sort of muscle recovery sleep if you go to bed too late in the evening. What happens when your sleep patterns are disrupted? So if you don't have consistent sleep time and wake time. So learning about that is fascinating. Going back to the athletics, if you get to bed between 10 a.m. or you're in bed for 10 a.m. and you're able to get good sleep between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., then that's when human growth hormone production is at its highest. And human growth hormone, 95% of which is produced while you're asleep, is exactly what you need as athletes to help your muscles recover. Now, the other part of deep sleep is called rapid eye movement. This is when the brain gets rid of all the garbage that's accumulated throughout the day. It's almost like a defragging of your computer. It's a time when dreams happen. This is where you get your brain recovery. So getting good REM sleep is what helps mental acuity. Now, everybody can make some moves to getting better sleep. Even people who have what they feel is an insomnia, whether that's been medically diagnosed or self-diagnosed. There's often reasons for not getting good sleep, and many of those can be addressed. For the majority of people listening, it's about getting better sleep hygiene. There are some simple things you can do. If you can't get more sleep, at least try to get to bed at the same time and get up at the same time every day. That sleep consistency will help your circadian rhythms. And once your body knows what its circadian rhythms are, that sort of consistency helps. I would like all athletes that I know, all recreational triathletes, to be getting to into bed and being in bed for at least 8 hours every night. That's what's called sleep opportunity. I think Matthew Walker refers to that in that book I mentioned earlier, is the opportunity to sleep. Now, being in bed for 8 hours definitely doesn't mean you're going to sleep for 8 hours. More likely you're going to sleep for 7 hours or 7.5 hours, but you're definitely going to be awake and have disturbances at some of that time. And you want to get about 25% of that time as deep sleep and 25% as REM, and the rest of it will be periods of awake and periods of light sleep. And that's a good night's sleep. So you need to be trying to get to bed earlier. Then we come back to time management, because one of the things that stops us from getting to sleep earlier is catching up on box sets on Netflix. But of course, it's not like when I was a little boy, and if you didn't watch it now, it was gone. We then got the video recorder, and then we got the DVD player, and now we've got streaming telly. And you can just go back onto Netflix or Amazon Prime or BBC iPlayer and catch up where you left off. So it doesn't matter if we don't watch it tonight, because we can catch up tomorrow. Things will still be there. We have to get off YouTube. We have to get off Facebook. And we have to get into bed. And that sleep hygiene extends to things that create blue light. So putting the telephone down, your mobile down earlier on in the evening, not being distracted by work, not looking at the iPad, or at least if you are going to watch your iPad and watch some videos on there, definitely don't do it in bed. And maybe purchase a pair of blue light blocking glasses so you don't get the blue lights that get into your brain that affect your sleep patterns. Maybe think about when we're eating. So you eat at least 2 to 3 hours before bedtime. And maybe think, if you like a glass of wine, have that glass of wine earlier in the evening rather than later on at night, because that will then help you to get a better night's sleep. And in the morning, and that's when arguably good sleep for the next night starts, try to get some daylight into your eyes as soon as possible. If it's a sunny morning, go out for a brief walk. If it's not, maybe get one of those sad lamps that gets some high amount of lux into those eyes. You need probably about 5 to 10,000 lux, and that's the brightness of the light in there. So you need to find ways of getting that in. Might also pay to purchase one of those little dawn alarm. So this is a light and an alarm clock that's mixed, and so instead of a sharp alarm suddenly waking you up in a big shock, you get this light that starts to come on about half an hour before your alarm clock goes off, and it gently brightens up the room in the same way that sunlight coming in through the window would. And apparently that works really well for better sleep, better awakening, and a better start to the day, which then builds into the next night. There's many other ways in which you can improve your sleep. I don't really have time to talk about them all today, but I do have some podcasts with Nick Little-Hales that you can listen to, and they will go into this in a bit more detail. And Nick talks about his 6 or 7 strategies for getting better sleep. Okay, now something that's really at the heart of being a high-performance human, it's like the fuel that we put into that high-performance Ferrari, the 4-star fuel, is nutrition. If you're a regular human being that does a little bit of exercise to keep fit, you're probably more worried about managing your body weight, particularly as you get older. If you're an athlete, you may be worried about managing your body weight, but you're probably also focused on refueling after training and making sure that you can fuel up for your next training session. And for that odd occasion in the year when you get a chance to race, what you do on race day. But these are all the icing on the cake. Really, there's no doubt that you have to consume macronutrients and micronutrients and vitamins and minerals, otherwise known as food, and you have to make those into meals. But because we're all so busy with lives that are full of fluff and stuff that's not important, we often don't have time to plan and make meals and then to sit and eat them as our body intended. So let's rewind a little bit. If you want to be in good shape, these are some of the things that I would recommend. Avoid quick fixes. Most quick fixes and drastic diets end up with the individuals really back at the same place that they started, maybe worse off. So that's no good. And there's, again, evidence that those yo-yo diets where you lose weight, gain weight, eventually lead to you becoming fatter and having poorer health. So you want to try and avoid that. Instead, think about the long term. and focus on feeling better and performing better. That is your body. Feeling better as in that you've got more energy, that you can think more clearly, and performing better in that you have good bowel movements, that your heart's working well, that you don't have high blood pressure, that you don't have poor blood glucose control. If you can focus on feeling better and perform, and the body performs better, the looking better part will actually take care of itself in the main. As well as thinking long term, it's important to find a sustainable eating philosophy that doesn't make you miserable. I know quite a few people who've tried keto. They've lost drastic amounts of weight, but many of those have reverted back to a more normal eating pattern because, to be quite frank, following a ketogenic diet in the long term is very, very challenging. You've got to really search high and low for the right foods. It's very restrictive if you're following true keto. Most of the people that do follow true keto for any length of time are doing so because they've arrived at this point for medical concerns, and it's more important for them to keep those at bay than it is to have a full range of foods at their choice. So they're happy to make that sacrifice. But for the majority of people who choose keto because they think it's a great way to lose weight, yes, it will be. But it may not be sustainable. It might make you miserable. You might not be invited to parties because or things because every time you go, you turn your nose up at the food that's there. And if you go out for dinner with your friends, you take 10 minutes over ordering because you have to go through everything on the menu and then make adjustments. So find something that's sustainable. Eat slowly and mindfully. I think that because we're busy, we all eat too fast. We all eat while we're distracted. So we're almost like that multitasking, which is multi-stupid. And because we're reading a book or we're reading the newspaper or we're reading our iPad, looking at Facebook, looking at emails, watching the TV, watching something on TikTok or Facebook or YouTube, and we're not concentrating on the food. And so it just goes in on spoonful after spoonful like a conveyor belt. And while we're eating more mindfully, aiming to leave the table feeling 80% full. These are two of the best strategies for losing weight and maintaining your weight. Eat slowly, leave the table feeling partially full. And also, as I mentioned earlier, planning and preparing. And if you're an athlete, then in order to eat well, you have to be proactive. There's no other way. You need to think in advance about how you can eat for the week around your training, around your work, but also to support that training to make sure you're recovering from one session and you've got energy for another session. So it's not about a hit and hope. It's about deliberate planning and deliberate practice. Diving in a bit deeper, there's nothing wrong with keto. There's nothing wrong with paleo. There's nothing wrong with low carb, high fat. In fact, there's probably some merit and value to each of those. But what I would say to the majority of people is before you go down that path looking for a quick fix, is to just look at what you're currently doing and try being better at the basics. Some of those basics are things like eating real foods. So I'll give you an example. You hear the phrase, eat something that's as close to the tree as possible. But what does that mean? Well, take an orange. You pick the orange off the tree, that's the original state. You take the orange, you squeeze it into a glass, that's now one step removed from the original state. Because there's no fibre, and therefore the fructose in the orange is converted more quickly into sugar. So it affects your blood sugar control a bit more. If that orange goes to the factory, is squeezed, combined industrially with the juice from other oranges, and they add preservatives, and they put it in a carton, now it's two steps removed, and now it's a processed food. Right? Those other preservatives and additives could probably be a bit more sugar and something else to make it, seem more palatable, make you enjoy it, right? Think about that in the context of all other things. When we talk about processed foods, anything that comes out of a tin, a packet, a bag can be delivered to your house as processed food, and it's got things that aren't necessarily in the natural state. Talking of things we really want to avoid, refined sugars. You see this come up so much now. Some people are a bit more full on with it, if you like, and say you shouldn't have any sugar. My friend Phil, Dr. Phil Maffetone, has an opinion like that, and very much to be respected. One that I think is a is a little extreme, but, you know, he'd argue vociferously against that. So it's a treat for some people, including me, and I have a sweet tooth. I have to be really careful. If I get going on the Dairy Milk or the Galaxy, I can eat a couple of large bars, you know, in no time. I would say to athletes and anybody that just has one of these high metabolisms that just because you might not have a weight issue doesn't mean sugar's good for you. It creates insulin response so that the body can deal with the extra sugar. But over time, this response becomes less sensitive. And because it becomes less sensitive, if it goes too far, you might become pre-diabetic or even diabetic. Okay? Even endurance athletes who exercise a lot aren't immune. In fact, the wanton sugar consumption by many athletes, either as a treat, i.e. that cake and coffee stop habit, or from the sports nutrition that you have while you're out on a ride, could be a long-term recipe for a diabetes epidemic in the exercise population. Now, that's just my assessment of the situation. I might be wrong, but I've been on lots of rides where I know that athletes are getting into the cafe and thinking that because they've ridden for 2 hours, they actually deserve that cake. I'm not sure that your body is going to see it as the treat that you think it will. Anyway, that's something else for another day, but just think about avoiding refined sugars. Let's go back to those processed carbs. Pastas, mass-produced bread, pizzas, cookies, cakes, again, crisps, white rice, laden with sugar, counted as high GI foods, mean that they're processed and converted into energy very quickly, leading to spikes in blood sugar. It's not the carbs that are the enemy, but the processed carbs are. So while athletes training hard need to fuel their efforts with carbohydrates, and sometimes that needs to be the processed carbohydrates, generally you can get your energy sources from root vegetables, from things like quinoa and beans and whole grain rice, which have a much less of an impact on your blood sugar, longer to enter the bloodstream. So be mindful of those. If you can do those three things, eating real food, avoiding refined sugars, limiting processed carbs, and you can eat more plants and less meat, you're probably going to go a long way towards hitting your goal. Now, once you've done all that and you start thinking, well, I quite like eating plants actually, and I'm not so fond of meat, then maybe you go down the vegetarian route or the vegan route. Maybe once you start eating less carbs and start eating more fats and more cold water fatty fish like salmon and mackerel, you might think, I quite like that. I might go down the low carb, high fat route. But this is just an extension of healthy eating already. And maybe it's an experiment for you to see what they do, but I wouldn't say those should be your first stop. So going back to the high performance human, they're mindful about what they eat. But remember, whilst nutrition's a key part of this, it's not the only part. What it does do though, is have an impact on gut health. Now, the microbiome is vastly underrated, I think. A lot of people don't even know about it. It's coming more to prominence now. There's an awful lot of research going on about around the world about gut health and the microbiome. And in the microbiome, we have billions and billions of cells and bacteria, some good, some bad. If we have a dysbiosis or an imbalance of that good bacteria, we produce lipopolysaccharides, which are toxins produced by the bacteria. And if there's too many of these, they can have a negative effect on lots of other things. So the gut health has a huge impact on just about every other aspect of your life. For instance, it has an impact on your immune system. It can have an impact on your your GI system, with things like leaky gut. So when you hear about athletes that have got gut traumas and GI issues during long distance races, sometimes leaky gut is the culprit. Leaky gut can occur in people who aren't athletes, but it's not very pleasant. And it's down to often developments from having too much bad bacteria. Your mental health can be impacted. And that impacts your brain function. Can reduce the amount of dopamine and serotonin. can impact short-term memory. It can impact the thyroid and lead to hypothyroidism, which leads to feelings of lack of energy and sluggishness and weight gain. If there are too many toxins created from these lipopolysaccharides, LPS, then that can have an impact, a negative impact on the kidneys. Weight management, for example. LPS can often lead to too many ghrelin hormones released. These are the ones that tell you that your appetite is greater, so they want you want to eat. On the other hand, those little satisfaction hormones, the leptin that are there, they tell you they're reduced, so now we have increased appetite and reduced satisfaction, so that means we keep on eating, and so you have weight management issues. Too much bad bacteria can lead to too much cortisol. That's a stress hormone. So that leaves you in more towards the fight or flight system. It can also lead to increased inflammation and oxidative stress. So that can lead to a lot of the chronic health conditions we get today. So this goes on and on and on. Can damage mitochondria, which are vital, not just as part of the aging process. Now, sort of mitochondrial dysfunction increases as we get older, and we want to avoid that. But mitochondria are vital for our athletic performance, certainly for endurance athletes. So we definitely want to be making sure we protect those. And once again, we come back to sleep. Having gut problems can impact your sleep in a negative way. So if you're having problems getting sleep or staying asleep or getting good deep sleep, it might be something to do with your gut. Now, there's a video with Dr. Brian Walsh that I put a link to in the show notes. He goes through this in far more detail than I can here, and he explains it in far better terminology than I can. So I'd strongly advise you to go and watch that video and understand the link between the health of your gut and the health of just about everything else in your body. All right, moving on. Exercise now. This is the big one. This is the one where most triathletes, most endurance athletes are getting A+. Let's go back to basics here. To maintain good health, you need about 4 to 6 hours of moderate to vigorous exercise a week. I think that is a World Health Organization recommendation. I think it's 5 times 45 minutes per week of moderate to vigorous activity. That vigorous activity doesn't mean going out and doing a HIIT session on your bike. That might be vigorous for you, but for most people that will be just suicidal. Vigorous is just getting the heart rate up and getting a bit of a sweat on. Okay, so you can go out for a vigorous walk and get that. The point is, if you're a triathlete, you probably don't need to exercise as much as you do and as much as you think you do to get good health. If you're not a triathlete, you're not an endurance athlete, but you're listening to this because you want to become a high-performance human, then please don't think you need to go to the extremes of endurance athletes. Exercise 4 to 5 days a week, get a sweat on and get out of breath on probably 3 or 4 of those, and you'll be doing just perfect. But also, please don't forget that aerobic fitness isn't the be-all and end-all. There are many aspects to keeping this human body in shape. And I suppose as a triathlete, I've been guilty of ignoring some of these. I think a lot of endurance athletes are really guilty of ignoring a lot of them. So here's what you need to focus on to have a well-rounded fitness aspect part of your life. So it's important to be mobile and flexible. Mobile means that you have movement around joints. I mean, think about functional mobility. Can you bend down to touch your shoes, to tie your shoelaces? Can you turn while you're sitting in the driving seat and look over your, if you're in the UK or Australia or New Zealand, can you turn and look over your shoulder, your right shoulder, and see what's behind you? If you're riding a bike, can you do that while you're moving forwards? So more than just mobility and flexibility there, balance and coordination as well. If you're in Europe and you're driving on the right-hand side of the road, then you'll need to be able to look over to your left. And one thing I always find a little bit more challenging is when I go to Europe and ride and have to look over my left shoulder, it always feels a little stiffer to look that way than it does in the UK. That's something I have to work on. So we want mobility and flexibility because these are things that definitely get affected with old age. And you really don't want to be reaching 60s and 70s, unable to bend over and pick things up off the floor, be able to reach for things, being able to look over your shoulder, being able to lift things over your head. So talking about lifting things over your head, power and strength, again, traditionally ignored by endurance athletes, but at their cost. And most of the world's elite endurance athletes are doing some form of strength training to benefit performance and health. As recreational athletes, I highly recommend it. Strength is just the ability to overcome gravity without undue fatigue. So that might be walking upstairs or walking up a steep hill. You've seen old people who struggle to go up the stairs. That's because they have neither the strength or the power. But strength could just be about standing upright and balancing. It could be about holding onto that bag and carrying it. It could be about lifting something above your head to put it into a cupboard. So we need to work on power and strength. A couple of sessions a week, every week. You don't need to be thinking about bodybuilding type work, but you definitely do need to be trying to move some weight. Okay, a webinar in itself or a podcast. Some more health-related things, bone density and connective tissue health. Connecting tissues are tendons and ligaments. So tendons attach muscles to bones, ligaments attach bones to bones. So we need to maintain the integrity of those, and we need to maintain good bone density. I mean, poor bone density is known as osteoporosis. And if we fall and we've got osteoporosis, it's more likely that we're going to break a bone. Now, sometimes we can't correct the osteoporosis, but we can improve strength and balance so people don't fall over. By the way, if you lift heavy weights and you work against gravity, then you can do something about bone density. If you have a good nutritional profile and a good diet and you don't try to restrict your food and don't try to lose too much weight and be too lean, then that will make sure you have good bone density. And lifting weights, moving against resistance, also helps with tendon and ligament integrity. Now, probably preaching to the choir about aerobic fitness, I probably don't need to tell you guys how important that is if you're triathletes or swimmers or runners. But if you're not, then yeah, definitely worth getting out there. And just walking is good enough. And if you go on an undulating route where you're walking up and down hills, then you'll get a bit out of breath and a bit sweaty, and that'll be even better for your aerobic fitness. But you really don't have to push yourself to the limit as often as you might think. In fact, you don't have to push yourself to the limit at all. If you like to do that, then that's fine. But please don't be worried that you don't like doing that. And finally, and I mentioned it already, balance and coordination. We require this in all areas of our life without realizing. Just standing on one leg is a fantastic test and predictor of health and longevity. So can you stand on one leg? Simple test is just stand in front of the mirror, lift one foot off the floor while you brush your teeth and see how long you can hold it for. All right, can you do that the same on both legs? Can you throw a ball against a wall and catch it in the other hand? Can you bounce a ball? Can you bounce a ball on a tennis racket? You know, things like that's the coordination aspect. Okay, so there's some very simple stuff here. Each of those areas needs to be attended to. And if you're working out regularly, try and fit something of these into your program on each occasion. Let's talk about a couple of other aspects of the high performance human that we perhaps haven't touched upon yet, but are important and without which we can't make forward progress. Work. Work's an integral part of just about everybody's life. You have to work. A lot of people like working, but there's no doubt about it that for the majority of us, we need to go to work to earn money to pay our way in life. And for those who are lucky enough to be financially secure, then perhaps working is a way of keeping your mind strong and maintaining social contact with other people. But that's fine. But we do not here, we're not living to work. Now, I know some people will argue, and some people will rightfully argue and tell me, well, I have to live to work. I can't have that luxury of just choosing what I do. I understand that. But if you can think about wanting to aspire to be a high-performance human, then you need to have to control the things you control. You can control how much work you do. I've got this theory that when I'm on my deathbed, I definitely won't be thinking about that Tuesday morning in November when I went to work. Unless something hugely significant happened on that day. I won't be thinking about that promotion I got back in 1992 or when I got made redundant in 1993. What I will be probably thinking about is the adventures I had with my friends, the relationships I had with people, the fun times I had on holiday, the experiences I had in my life. Those are the things we do outside of work. So remember, please, that you work to live, not live to work. I mean, even if you have a job where you don't get the choice about your hours, there's certain things that you can control. So focus on what you can control. At the moment, you probably can't stop people mixing. You can't stop the spread of coronavirus, but you can do your bit. So that's something you can control. You can stick to your rules rather than trying to bend them. At work, try and find ways to improve your productivity and efficiency. I've got a whole list of these things that you can do. I mentioned them earlier when we were talking about time management. If you can remember that those things were like disappearing the time vampires, eliminating the distractions, being clear in your communication, eating that frog. So think about some of those and how you can introduce them into your working life to get things done quicker, to be more productive. And finally, and something which has become much more topical in the last year during the coronavirus pandemic, and something which is going to stay with us for an awful long time, working from home. I've worked at home now for the last 25 years, so it's not new to me. But one thing that has never changed is that there is a blurring of the lines between your work and your personal life. I happily live what I call a life and have a lifestyle business. And so that how I live my life out of work and what I do for work are sort of inextricably entwined. And sometimes that means that I'll have to work on a Sunday afternoon, much like I am now recording this podcast. I'll have to take phone calls from people at hours when most people have shut down for the evening and are sitting watching the telly or having some fun with their friends. I might have to do a work phone call with somebody in another part of the world. Okay? But if you work for an organization and you're working from home, you still have some boundaries. If you were working from the office, you'd have left the office, say, 5:30, 6 o'clock. And often you would have left your work behind. You'd have shut your computer down. You'd have walked out the door and that would have been it for the next morning. But now you're working from home, you might find that you're tempted to keep your laptop on a bit later, do some work in an evening. And that's when the boundaries get blurred. So I think it's important to understand where those boundaries are. And some people get this quickly and can make that distinction, and other people struggle with it. But it's really important to understand about your work and your life and what's more important to you. Okay, finally, again, something I think that we've all learned in the last year is that relationships and family and mental health are critical. And relationships, strong relationships and good family commitments have an impact on your mental health, positive or negative. Firstly, think about yourself. You're the asset. If you're the breadwinner in your family, you're the asset. We need to protect you. Okay, you're like the president where we have the security guards around and we're defending you from people who want to do you harm. Because if you're the breadwinner or you're the key person in your family and something happens to you, then how do all the things that you do get done? They don't. So maybe that means that you have to take yourself out of harm's way. Maybe when you're ill, you shouldn't go to work. Well, hopefully that's something we've all learned out of the coronavirus pandemic is let's not go to work when we're ill. Let's stay at home and get well as quick as possible so we don't infect others. We know, and there's definite evidence about this, to show that good relationships have a positive impact on your mental health, on everybody else's mental health. There's been a lot talked of recently, particularly about old people who live on their own and about how that can create loneliness and that can create depression and that can have a huge impact on health span, lifespan and your longevity on this earth. So please think about relationships you create. And it's easy when you're an athlete and you're getting immersed in training for an event to forget about some of those great relationships you have, to forget about it's your time to look after the children or to take your partner out for dinner or even to catch up with friends because you've got that run to do or that session to do. Some of the things that I've found that have really helped my mental health during the last year is keeping a gratitude diary. I mean, for goodness sake, life's been pretty bad, hasn't it, over the last year? For all of us. It's been a big challenge. But if you just sit and think about it for a moment, you're probably sat in your house, you're probably listening to this on your phone or off your iPad or on your computer. You probably got the heating on. You probably had something nice to eat. You probably feel quite comfortable. Now, that's something to be grateful for, isn't it? There's probably about half a dozen things that I have listed there that you could be grateful for. But what about if you lived in Syria or one of those sort of famine-stricken African countries? Or you were a race within a community that's downtrodden and abused, okay, and you felt like your whole life was under threat. What would you have to be grateful for there? I know for one that I would be grateful I just wasn't in that situation. I'm grateful that we live in a democracy and that largely we get the freedom to do what we like. I'm grateful for that every day. I'm grateful for the fact that I have great friends. I'm grateful for the fact that I wake up every morning in my own bed, choosing what time to get up with the heating coming on, and I can go and make myself a cup of coffee. Simple little things that we get to do every day that perhaps we don't appreciate, but practice a gratitude diary and that will make you feel better about life. And while you're doing that, think about some of the other things that you can put into that gratitude diary. Somebody you have to be thankful for, somebody you appreciate or something you appreciate. Okay, somebody whose life you'd like to improve that day, or somebody who improved your life. There's lots of stuff to be thankful for, so have a think about that. And if you do start practicing gratitude every day, whether you do it formally by writing in a diary or just in a moment of quiet time, then please feel free to reach out and tell me how that works for you. Being in the moment, this is something we talked about earlier, wasn't it, right at the beginning, about being mindful and being present. For example, think about when you last went to the pub. I know it's a long time ago, or when you were last sat on a train or at an airport or in a public place. How many people do you see sitting there with their friends or their family or their other half? And actually, they're not paying a blind bit of attention to each other. They're both immersed generally in their cell phone, aren't they? Looking at Facebook or TikTok or whatever, and hardly conversing with the person opposite them. Or you go for dinner and you see some couples there or some guys, and they've all got their phones out and they're all on the phones and nobody's chatting and nobody's listening and nobody's engaging. Yeah, that's not being present. You can't have a conversation with somebody while they're on their phone. It's just, and grunts and, you know, nods. Yeah. So think about being present in the mind and mindful all the time. And finally, and this relates to work as well, take some time off. I mean, you deserve it. Everybody that's got a work contract has holiday entitlement, don't they? I mean, I know it's a long time since I worked, but I have friends who have jobs and they get holidays. Often they don't take them, which, perplexes me. You get lunch hours, although often people don't take those, which perplexes me. People get weekends off, although often they're working from home when they should be out watching the kids play football or taking them to the park or going and enjoying some time out riding or running with their friends. But they don't because they're working, and that perplexes me. So I appreciate that if you are on a jet path to success and you want to work hard, that's fine. But be mindful about that, and the sacrifices you're making have to be a choice. And, a high performance human would understand that and find some time to balance that out eventually. All right. So, wow, we're an hour in already. I've shared my thoughts on how to be a high performance human. I'm pretty certain if you've got this far, there's at least one thing that you can do from that that will help you move forwards. There's an awful lot more stuff that we could talk about. Nutrition and anti-aging, exercise and anti-aging, how to organize your training so it has the positive impacts on your body but without being damaging to it. Yeah, so much stuff. It's a journey. I don't expect you to get everything right all the time, but remember that the needle, we're trying to move it from the left, which is where we are now, to the right, which is the ultimate high performance human. And as long as what you're doing keeps moving that needle to the right in some way and being mindful of where you are on that journey, that's all one can ask. If you still feel invincible because you haven't reached 56 yet, then your time will come. But if you can be making preparations for that now, you'll be far better equipped when you do get to this age to be able to enjoy the rest of your life fully and at the speed and altitude that you're currently doing. So that's all from me. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget to look at the show notes. I've made an awful lot of notes as I've been chatting about links I'm going to put up there. So please do have a look at those links. Have a listen to some of the podcasts with some of the guests that where we talk about some of these subjects in more detail. And perhaps read some of the books that I refer to, which talk about longevity and higher levels of human performance. Just a reminder that if you'd like a copy of my 40-page ebook, How to Be a High Performance Human, you can get a 50% discount. So it's going to cost you just a fiver now. If you email Beth at thetriathloncoach.com, she'll arrange that for you. And there will be a link in the show notes, so you can also click on that. You can also join our High Performance Human Facebook community, so look for the link in the show notes there. And that's it, all from me today. Thanks for listening. And in the meantime, stay healthy and stay focused on being a high performance human in every aspect of your life.